prepare yourselves for Ethan and Aaron's Confessions of a Movie Snob, the ongoing discussion of
favorite movies of the year.
Ladies and gentlemen, trees and multiforms, welcome to the podcast. I am Aaron.
And I'm Ethan.
And he's Ethan. Hey, and, you know, no fanfare about it at all. We got Ed Douglas back, one of my favorite guests of all time. So hello, Ed.
Oh, wow. Thanks a lot. That's really flattering. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. Well, we have you back because we did it last year with you, and, you know, you're the person that makes the most sense to me to have on. What we're doing now is we're going to be discussing our favorite movies of 2012. Should be good. Did it last year. Some good movies came out this year. Typically speaking, we'll have geekly happenings and stuff like that, but it's been, 3 weeks since we recorded. Stuff's happened, nothing huge, at least nothing particularly huge to our particular subset of people that would listen. So I guess, just moving on into it, 2012, the year, if nothing else, has been a hell of a year for Ethan and I. We got married. We did 32. Hell, Ethan got married twice. We've done
what? two different women, or two the same woman?
To the same woman.
Right. That's good. Okay. I'd be more impressed if it was two different women.
Bunch of different stuff happened. Some of it good, some of it bad. But we are at the end of the year, but we're not going to be talking about the good and the bad. We're just going to be talking about our movies and our favorite movies that came out this year. Jumping right out about this, last year we said, you know, what jumped out at us about 2012. I can't think of anything in particular. I didn't look up any statistics or anything like that. I do know that it was the biggest box office of all time. That kind of makes sense. I would imagine that's going to keep happening so long as there's at least somewhat, you know, quality movies coming out. But that happened. Anything jumping out at you two?
Not really. I mean, it was an interesting year box office wise because, yeah, you know, you had Avengers and then you had like two other $400 million movies, which is, as far as I know, has never happened.
Two movies that made over $1 billion, right?
Well, worldwide, yeah. Worldwide, right. I mean, just in the States, like, you had three movies over $400 million is, like, never happened. Usually there's one, sometimes two. And then you have a bunch of, and, you know, I think it was a really good year. I mean, I think the quality of the movies got better as the year went along. But the box office did well. People were going to the movies still. So,
yeah.
But that was nice story.
I'd agree that the quality of the movies was a bit better this year. I mean, there was no movie that came out this year I saw, at least, that I actively, like, you know, wanted to burn in next, you know, fire. I mean, this year had its share of bad movies, but none of them were just, you know, absolutely about your eyes awful.
I disagree
with that too. I'm gonna say this. I guarantee you, out of the three of us, I've seen the least amount of movies of the year. I'm sure Ed's still over 300. Last I heard, Ethan was in the 40s or the 50s. I don't even think I saw 30 movies this year. But it's going to be kind of interesting because we've decided we're also going to throw out the movie that we like the least. And this is something I did for their benefit, not mine, because I was able to choose the movies I wanted to see this year. You know, I wasn't doing it for work. Both of them ended up having to at one point or another. So that part should be interesting. I do want to reflect what Ethan said. There was no movie that I actively sought out that I was disappointed in. It did happen a little bit in 2012, but there was none of those big flagship movies that came out that I thought particularly disappointed. I mean, some people might say that they, disappointed kind of, but there was no major fucking misses as far as I was concerned. I mean,
like,
we can,
you, like, you yeah. saw that, like, you knew, like, you knew to avoid Battleship.
I saw Battleship, Ed.
Oh, okay.
And it wasn't, but I wasn't disappointed in that because I knew what I was going to get out of that. Yeah, so, yeah, I saw... I did see Battleship, but I saw it under the assumption it's the movie that, you know, this is really elitist and smart-ass of me, but I saw it as the movie that I think audiences deserve for going to see shit like, you know, Transformers and Smurfs and, you know, just like that nostalgic 80s stuff just in droves. So I got what I expected out of that. I mean, honestly, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, but it wasn't very good. So that did happen. That did happen indeed. Okay, last year we did this, and it was kind of off the cuff, but this year we're going to do it because it worked out. We're going to go over the top 10 movies of the year, and we're going to say if we've seen them or not. Top 10 domestic gross. We all three saw The Avengers. I know that because we all talked about it, correct?
Yep.
And we all saw Dark Knight Rises.
Yep.
Did we all see Hunger Games?
Yep.
Yes.
Did we all see Skyfall?
Yep.
Okay. Yes. I did not see Breaking Dawn Part 3, 2.
Neither did I. I never saw that.
I didn't see that.
I haven't seen either of the Breaking Dawns yet.
Did you see that one, Ethan?
God, no.
Okay.
No, I knew, but after the first three or four, I kind of said, that's it. That's enough for me.
Yeah, I gave up after... I gave up after one, but I saw three because of my wife, but whatever. We all saw Spider-Man, right?
Yep.
What about The Hobbit?
Yeah.
I have not seen The Hobbit yet.
Yeah, I didn't think Ethan made it.
No, I have not seen it.
I saw Brave.
Yep.
I saw that numerous times.
Ted?
Yep.
I have not seen Ted.
I did. And
is that your top 10 list? Are you giving us a preview of your top 10 list right now? Or
me? No.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. Some of these fall in my top 10, but not most of them.
And you're eating through the top grossers, I guess.
Yeah, these are the top grossers.
Oh, I see. I thought
No. We're going to break it down like in a list. It's going to be all kinds of fancy and shit. And then the number 10 highest grossing movie was Madagascar 3. I did not see that.
I saw that. Actually,
neither did I.
Okay.
It actually was better than I thought it would be. I saw it on a plane.
Huh. Well, hey.
Yeah, well,
you know, at least you didn't walk out of that movie despite the fact of it being on a plane. That's never
that
good.
Make it hard to walk out.
2, 3, 4, 5. It's okay.
I mean, you could walk out of it. That would be a thing in of itself, really.
Yeah,
that'd be bad. Okay. Anything else before we actually just get started on our list? I was pleased with this year. Last year on our I've re-listened to our end of the year show from last year, and at least I was relatively optimistic about this upcoming year. Listening to it, you know, from a year ago, and I wasn't let down. The movies I was most looking forward to didn't really disappoint me. So that's good. That's good.
Yeah. I'd have to agree. I mean, there were movies. I mean, I ended up seeing a lot more movies than I thought I was going to see. And,
wow, right.
You know, there were the ones I was really looking forward to ended up, you know, being quite satisfying. So
yeah.
There were a few that I ended up seeing I didn't think I'd see. And then there were some that in that sort of way of seeing those that I ended up liking a lot. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Okay, well, why don't we just get started on this, guys? I guess we'd be starting with Ethan and your number 6 favorite movie of 2012.
Sure. Well, my number 6, you know, going through and rating the ranking all of these movies, I guess it's not going to be a surprise that I put this one on here. It's Ridley Scott's Prometheus.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge fan of Ridley Scott. I mean, that's obvious at this point. And I was very jazzed about Ridley Scott going back to science fiction and doing really anything. And this movie hit it number 6 on my list, mainly because I thought it was just a gorgeous movie. It has obviously some problems with it, and it's sort of has that schizophrenic prequel thing going on. But overall, I really enjoyed it. It was Ridley Scott just being, you know, having those great visuals and having doing a really nice thing of a nice way in his 3D. Although I didn't actually see the movie in 3D because 3D annoys. But all things aside, when you're doing a prequel to a movie that's, you know, more that's 30 years old, you have a lot of sort of logistical problems of it looking much nicer than the movie that it's supposed to be a prequel to.
Right.
And I kind of liked how really didn't care, but I mean, that's really got sort of a shit attitude.
Mm-hmm.
The main annoyance I had with this movie was the way that Fox marketed it, and basically every time Damon Lindelof opened his mouth and said something about it was pretty much stupid. But
yeah,
overall, I really enjoyed it. It's, I mean, obviously, I'm a huge Ridley Scott fan, so my prediction ended up being Prometheus.
Okay, now Ed, this is one that if I looked over your list earlier, and this was pretty high on your list too, right?
Yeah, it's funny. I was just looking over my anticipated movies of 2012 list, and that was Prometheus was number 1 on my most anticipated, and it ended up number 10 on my top 10. So I guess it kind of lived up to what I was hoping.
Well, good.
Yeah, and I didn't look at it as an alien prequel, even though it was kind of surreptitiously marketed as one. I thought I could just looked at it as another Ridley Scott dark science fiction movie.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
That was one of my main reasons I really liked it. It was, you know, it was Ridley Scott getting back into science fiction and Blade Runner being one of my favorite movies of all time. I was like, okay, I'm ready to see that. I think this was probably, I don't know if I was anticipating this more or Avengers more going into 2012, but this one certainly it disappointed, but didn't disappoint. You know, I didn't leave the movie theater pissed off or anything. I felt satisfied seeing the movie, and it was one of those that I think a lot of people sort of bitch and doggone that it gets a lot of flack, but I think not deserving it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
At least right here.
I think a lot of people went in thinking it was going to be an alien movie, and because it was marketed that way, and I think that really hurt it a lot.
Yeah.
Well, if you approach the movie understanding that it's not an overt prequel to Alien, but it does have some little nods to it there and there, which is fine. But what it really is sort of Ridley Scott doing at the Mountains of Madness.
Oh yeah.
Then it's much more interesting to watch it that way because it's not marketed as, it shouldn't be marketed as an Alien movie because that's not what it is. But I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Mm.
Okay.
Well, this is a movie that I anticipated showing up on both of your lists because I knew Ethan liked it and I read Ed's list. I didn't like it. I was going to put together a big, long thing about why I didn't like it, you know, point by point, what I didn't like about it. And I sat down to do it, and then I realized that I didn't really remember it. And I left it at that because, you know, if I can't fucking remember it, I'm not going to go through and read a Wikipedia entry just so I can say, well, this was stupid. That isn't the point to me. I didn't remember it. I thought visually it was stunning. I saw it in IMAX 3D. I mean, it was visually stunning. And it does have that going for it. But overall, I didn't like it. I didn't care about it being an Alien or Aliens prequel. I was just trying to look at it for what it was. And for what it was, I didn't like it. And there's some people that really hate the crap out of this movie. I'm not there to where I hate it, but I don't fucking remember it. And that's a big problem for me.
Well, the best thing, have you seen the honest trailer for Prometheus? Because that's probably, whether you like the movie or not, the honest trailer probably encapsulates everything that's wrong with the movie, like all the flaws. But
yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's really funny. It's like, it's kind of, even if you like the movie, you watch it, you go, like, okay, that's true. That is kind of stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen that. And, you know, I'm right there with Ethan. I think that Ridley Scott's shown up on both of my favorite directors of all time lists. I love Ridley Scott, but this one missed for me. And it's too bad, but you know what? Ridley Scott doesn't owe me a goddamn thing. He's had a hell of a good career, and you know, I'm not really gonna fault him for it. Other people will, but it's not really my style.
Okay.
Now with my number six. Last year and the year before, I chose a direct-to-video Batman movie. Last year it was Year One. Yeah. Year before that, it was Under the Red Hood. This year, the one that came out was The Dark Knight Returns, and I didn't like it, so it's not my number 10. But I didn't like it because I'm not a huge fan of that story to begin with, because I don't know, to me there just doesn't feel like there's a whole hell of a lot at, you know, stake because it's set so far in the future. But that's neither here nor there. My real number my real number six is, I don't believe Ethan saw it, and I'm sure Ed saw it, because anyway, yeah, he saw pretty much everything. But it's the Mike Birbiglia Sleepwalk with Me.
Oh, nice.
It was a good movie. I don't know if you guys are familiar, you guys or even the listeners are familiar with Mike Birbiglia's stand-up career, but he's a funny guy. And I have a couple of movies on this list that I liked because they reminded me of other movies that I liked. And in a really weird, roundabout kind of way, this movie sort of reminded me of Lost in Translation.
Because, oh, interesting. Wow, okay. I thought you were going to say Annie Hall, because that's the kind of one where people...
Well, it kind of has that going for it, too. But the thing about it that really kind of reminded me of it is the thing I liked about Lost in Translation was going on here is you have Mike Birbiglia, I can't say that, I'm not Italian or whatever that is, but you have him, and he's a very funny guy. He does good stand-up, and there's this neat thing going on in the movie where he was starting his stand-up career, and he was unsuccessful, he wasn't very good, and he was painful to watch. But in the scenes like in between when he was doing his stand-up, he was just talking to his girlfriend or talking to other, and he was legitimately funny. And it was neat to see that kind of performance in a movie like this. It was a really interesting movie, and I picked it for my number six because it's just one that I wanted people to know about. It's a good movie, and it's on Netflix. It's all over the place. Check it. I like this one a lot.
Oh yeah, it's a good movie. And actually, I'm really surprised to see it because I wasn't even sure it would play in your neighborhood. Did you see it on VOD or?
No, I saw it. We have a little theater here that shows independent things, and I heard about it on a WTF with Mark Maron, like as a promotion. So I sought it out because I like that, and there was. And I like Mike Birbiglia, and I think I was just in the mood to see like some kind of movie like that. So yeah, I this one I did see in the theater, and it's a good one. It's a really good one. I recommend anybody check it out.
Yeah, I didn't know his anything about him beforehand, but I at Sundance there was already a lot of talk about the movie. A lot of people were saying that they liked it. So when it finally came out, I made sure to go see it. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it. No, you hadn't seen it, Ethan?
No, I have not seen it actually.
Okay. Well, yeah, check it out. It's not going to change your life, but it was a good little movie, and I do think it deserves mention of my favorite movies of the year. Okay, Ethan, moving on to your number five.
Oh, should I do my number six?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ed.
No, I didn't do my number six.
Shit, I got out of sequence. Go ahead.
I just didn't listen to the show. Listen to you guys talk. So my number six, which I'm sure you both saw, was Skyfall.
Uh-huh.
I'm a big James Bond fan, have been for many, many years. It was actually my number five most anticipated movie, and mainly because of Sam Mendes. And I know we talked before about Road to Perdition being such a great movie. And, of course, I've been a fan of his, and I was really dying to see what he would do with a James Bond movie because he's not like the most obvious choice to do an action movie, but he's a good guy with action, with drama and stuff like that, and he pulled together a really good cast.
Well, not to mention his visuals. I mean,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Skyfall ended up at number three on my list, and I'm a huge Bond fan, and Mendes came in and actually made this really, really pretty Bond movie.
Yeah.
And for the first time, and I would even argue it's the first time you get a compelling Bond villain.
First time in decades.
I'd say first time ever.
Oh, honestly. Bull! The best Bond villain.
Yeah.
Holy shit, Ethan. Go ahead.
This is by far the most compelling, interesting character interesting Bond villain like ever.
Wow. That's a bold statement, dude. Okay.
Totally. But it's this character that isn't two-dimensional. He's not trying to take over the world. He just has this simple goal. He's going about it in a complicated way, albeit. It really, the movie is built on the excellent performance of Javier Bardem, and he made this character that, everyone was joking, oh, we're going to see Anton Chigga versus Bond.
And we did not see that.
But we got, I think, an almost equally interesting character out of Javier Bardem, and it was a really refreshing change to the direction that the Bond movies were going. And with Skyfall, I really enjoyed it. They decided to get away from that global thing. This overarching, super sinister organization that Bond has to fight. Like, let's move away from that and actually do more of a Bond, a centralized Bond movie about this character and about these other characters. And that's what we do. Let's make a good spy movie.
Yeah.
I love Skyfall.
Oh, yeah. What's interesting about Javier Bardem though is he doesn't appear in the movie until about an hour and 10 minutes into it.
Yeah, right.
Which is really kind of interesting because you have a Bond villain and you kind of like see what he's doing and you hear about him from others, and then when he appears, it was like an amazing scene where he's kind of in the distance, walking towards the foreground, giving the speech, and you're like, what are we watching here? And it was like, I mean, I've never seen an entrance for a Bond villain like that ever.
It was pretty excellent. It was pretty excellent. This is a movie that I left off my list. It has nothing to do with I didn't like it. It's funny is Ethan and I saw this movie together, and we saw it, when it came. It was actually like a week or so before it came out, and we haven't talked about it at all. You know, I mean, we usually like, yeah, this was good, but I don't think we've really said much about it. I saw on your list that you were a pretty big fan of it, Ed, and I could tell that Ethan liked it, and I kind of wonder if Ethan has any impression. I think I've kind of made it a little bit clear on Facebook. I thought it was a great movie. I thought it was really, really, really good. I thought visually it was great. Javier Bardem played the most compelling Bond villain in decades. I don't know if I'd go so far as forever, because I don't like making that hyperbolic of a statement. But I thought it was a wonderful, fantastic, really good movie. My one misgiving is not the fucking movie's fault. My one misgiving was I don't know what's going to happen to this franchise now, because it was a reset at the end. We're back with Moneypenny, and we have spoiler alert, I guess, but we have a new M, we have Q again, and it's everything that worked about these last three was just like kind of like the just starting out Bond, and I don't want it to turn back into fucking Goldfinger, or I'm sorry, Golden or Goldfinger for that matter, but Goldeneye or the stuff from the late 70s, early 80s, and I don't know, man. I mean, it just depends on if competent directors like Mendez, keep themselves attached to this, then, we're going to get more good stuff. But if we hire somebody else like Lee Tamahori, who is just, I mean, I'm sure he's a good guy. I don't know the guy at all. But he's effectively a studio stooge, and he's going to do what he is told. But if you have somebody like Mendez, like these big name directors, they're going to fight for this ongoing vision. And right. I'm just a little bit worried, but this movie I thought was very good, and I also want to say that I still think the Casino Royale was better. I have heard a lot of people call it the greatest James Bond movie of all time.
I like Casino Royale a lot. I mean, this I thought that both this and that one are kind of in my top for
absolutely
at least 20 years. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But it was very excellent, and I just have that to say, and that's and Ethan pointed out, yeah, I'm being really pessimistic about it, but. It's just, it was just what I walked away thinking. I'm like, ah, shit, what does this mean? They're going to start sucking again now, is what I said.
Well, one thing is they have this. I mean, the writer, John Logan, is going to be staying on top of that. I mean, they might not get Sam Mendes back, but they,
right.
They have the same writer, and he's going to keep the new characters. Even though they haven't announced it, I'm pretty sure he'll keep the new characters. Just find a way to integrate them into what they did in Skyfall, I think,
And I will give this movie mad props because of the bullshit it fought to come to actually get made. I mean,
oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, yeah. We report. I mean, it was recent enough to reported it on the podcast. There's a possibility that Daniel Craig was going to walk away because of the bankruptcy and all that, and we were all like, fuck that. But it overcame some great stuff, and a lot of times when you have a movie that's dealing with a lot of studio crap, they don't turn out this well, and it turned out very well. So it's an excellent choice. I mean, do not get me wrong. I thought it was awesome. So,
I don't think he was ever going to walk away. I just thought that it was,
A long time. It wasn't that he was going to walk away, but if they were held up in bankruptcy litigation for years and years and years, he might move on. And I didn't know, but that was what was so scary about that situation. I'm glad he didn't. Yeah. He's Ethan and I said it a long time ago, and this movie confirmed it. He's still my favorite James Bond. I mean, I know that's blasphemous with Sean Connery and et cetera, but he's my favorite James Bond. And this is another feather in that cap, so to speak, of why he's my favorite James Bond. Very excellent movies here. Mm-hmm. Okay, Ed, let's move on to your number five.
Do you want to do Ethan? Do you want to do Aaron's first or no? Ethan's first or no?
Wait a minute. What? That was your number five, six.
That was my number six.
Man, it's been too long since I podcast. Ethan, what's your number five?
Okay. Well, what was your number six, Aaron?
I said my number six. It was Sleepwalk With Me.
Sleepwalk With Me, right? Okay. So my number five is actually a movie that I hadn't planned to go see, and it was recommended from various people to go check it out because it was actually good. It's Ben Affleck movie Argo.
Still haven't seen it. Want to?
And it's really good. It's the way it's filmed is really nice. They didn't pretty things up. It's obviously set in the late 70s, and What's fun to watch movies like this, and what it really reminded me of, was very much it had that same feel that Munich had. And obviously, it's about this. It's about the hostage crisis and the movie to get these people out of Iran at the end of the '70s, beginning of the '80s. And what they did with it kind of was they didn't make everyone, you know, pre-Hollywood stuff. They didn't make them on them and make them look you know, glamorous. The movie is very gritty and had this very seventies feel to it. To the point that even Ben Affleck, who directed the movie, at the beginning of the movie, they used the old 1970s Warner Brothers logo.
Oh, neat. I like it when they do stuff like that.
But they also did that for Magic Mike, though. So it's sort of like, and that was only a few months ago. So yeah. It wasn't that original.
See, no. I saw...
I didn't see Magic Mike. So.
I did.
Oh. I know, but they did the same thing. So it was just like that when I saw it.
I was actually about ready to point that out. I thought that was kind of neat, but go ahead.
But this one is a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun in that it's really good. But what I liked about it was the way that they sort of wove the story together, and they had this they're telling this true story, and you know how it ends already because it's
history
and everything. But you're still at the end of this movie. I mean, my wife and I were watching it, and we were. You know, white knuckling the seats, waiting to see if these guys got away. But we knew that they did. You know, and it was just sort of this really good filmmaking, really interesting story. And it's one of those things that it's you know based on the true story. And you know that there are people in the world like this, and people in the world that do this, like the Ben Affleck character in the movie. And you're like, that's really kind of amazing. And for me, watching this happened just at the start of my lifetime. And that's just kind of interesting look and saying this was all happening when I was, you know, crawling around on all fours. And this was
– Or Tuesday.
This is fascinating. Exactly. And it's to me, it was Tuesday. and, you know, stuff like this, I'm glad they make movies of stuff like this. And I really, really it had that real big Munich feel to me. And you know how much I liked that movie. And so this one – had
to
make it my number five.
Cool.
Yeah, I saw Argo and I liked it a lot. I saw it at Toronto, and then I saw it again like not that long ago. I liked it. I didn't love it. I thought it was an interesting story. I thought the stuff with Alan Arkin and John Goodman in Hollywood was hilarious and great. But I thought the actors I thought the actors who played the six hostages, or not they weren't hostages, but the six people kind of hidden away in Iran. I think they weren't as good, and I thought it was lost a lot when I got to Iran. And, you know, when Alan Arkin and John Goodman weren't on screen, I thought it lost a lot.
Yeah, they were hilarious.
Great, yeah.
I haven't seen it. I want to see it. It's just one I haven't made it to the theater to see. So I'll see it, sure. I think Ben Affleck's an interesting director. You should keep your eyes out on him.
Yeah, okay. It's definitely worth – I definitely can say it's worth seeing, you know, if you have a chance.
Yeah. Okay, Ed, what's your number five? Let's get back on track here.
My number five is a movie called The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
I want to see that so much.
Yeah, it's a novel by Stephen Chbosky, who kind of daringly adapted it himself. He basically wrote the screenplay based on his book, and then he directed it himself, which is usually kind of not something you want to do because – you know, you spend a lot of time writing a book. I mean, that doesn't mean you could direct a movie. And he actually pulled together a pretty amazing young cast, including Logan Lerman, who you may remember from Percy Jackson and 3:10 to Yuma. He was the kid in 3:10 to Yuma.
Yeah.
Emma Watson, who you might know as Hermione from the Harry Potter movies. And Ezra Miller, who is sort of like an up-and-coming teenager who's kind of taken on a lot of really interesting and daring roles. And he kind of put them together as this kind of a teen coming of age type movie, but it's not John Hughes. It's very different, but it really reflected my own high school life in a lot of ways. Like I hung out with a lot of weird oddballs in high school, if you hadn't guessed already. And,
get the hell out of here.
it's a really fun movie. It's between the three of them, some of the other characters, the music. It has like the Smiths and like a lot of cool like early 90s music. It's really just a really enjoyable high school coming of age movie, which, you know, I mean, obviously there've been some great ones, but this one really stood out, and I just loved it.
Yeah, it's one that I'm familiar with that I do want to see, but I haven't made it yet. So, yeah. You seen it, Ethan?
I have not.
I was looking forward to it. Looking forward.
Yeah, it'll be on DVD pretty soon, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And it's not. I like seeing movies in theaters, but it's one that you can watch on TV and, you know, with your wives and or girlfriends or whatever, and you know, it's hopefully it'll reflect your own. I'm not sure if it'll reflect your own high school experience, but
you're a little bit older than us, but who knows? We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I think you'll be able to enjoy it just by the humor and drama and it's a very different. It captures some of the things that are great about some of the high school movies that we love and that I love personally, I guess, you know, but you know, also has a very distinct tone because it's, you know, directed by the guy who wrote the book. So
that's interesting. It sounds to me like it'd be worth checking out for that alone. Moving on to my number five. My number five is the Rian Johnson Looper. This is a movie I was really looking forward to. It's got Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it. B, it's Rian Johnson. I fucking loved Brick. C, it was a time travel movie. So I was all, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Bruce Willis can go eat a bag of dicks. But the rest of the stuff, I was looking forward to it. And I didn't, believe it or not, I expected to be disappointed by this. You know, I mean, because, you know, this is the kind of movie that's just always on a razor's edge. I mean, you can go one way or the other pretty damn quickly. But this one turned out to be pretty excellent. I mean, it's a world apart from something like Brick, but you can tell it was the same people that made it at the same time. I kind of like the fact that it was set close enough in the I like it when movies are set in the future, but they're not set in like the year 7000, you know, to where we can actually, like, you know, logically see it come to this. And obviously we'd have to, you know, figure out time travel pretty goddamn quickly and, you know, stuff like that. But there's a lot of neat stuff going on. It almost, and I'm not going to say it does, but almost just about has a neo-noir feel. Not quite. I mean, it's an interesting movie. I really liked it. The little kid in it, who was the, you know, well, I don't want to give away too much, but the little kid in it was fucking terrifying. I thought that it was funny leading up to the movie. You know, I saw the trailers and whatnot, and I saw that they made Joseph Gordon-Levitt up to look like you know, Bruce Willis, and, you know, made him act like Bruce Willis. I'm like, why the hell couldn't they, like, meet somewhere in the middle? Maybe make up both of them a little bit. Then I realized it's because, you know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is an actor and Bruce Willis is a movie star. You know, he doesn't really stray much. But I liked it a hell of a lot. It's my number five. You guys seen it?
Yep, I saw it. There was another. Yeah. Okay, go ahead, Ethan.
No, I saw this movie, and I was looking for this movie for pretty much the entire year. My love of Joseph Gordon-Levitt is well documented, and he is my official man crush. Looper, it's my number two on my list, actually.
Oh,
and I absolutely fell in love with this movie. I thought the design on it was just gorgeous. I loved the, and you're entirely right, this neo-noir feel to it. It was this neo-future noir type of thing.
Not quite, but I'm glad you get what I mean.
Not quite. Yeah, I know what you mean. It was not as, like, heavy-handed on the noir as, like, Blade Runner was.
Right.
But it was still very stylistic, and it had this real good 1960s feel to it, the 1950s, 1960s feel to it, but it's in that sort of retro technology aspect. And
right. Like the gun. Like, the gun was one of those things I was talking to Rachel about. You know, I said, like, that gun was something that, you know, that this shows, like, what they're going for in this movie, because it wasn't a shiny-ass ray gun. It looked like something that they took a couple of Remingtons, glued them together, and cut them in half and called it a future gun. And just little details like that mean something to me. So I liked it.
And it wasn't overpowering. It didn't take away from the movie. It just really added some great flavor to it. It was a good spice that they added to the movie, and it was another, you know, it's one of those time travel movies, but it was a time travel movie that really flowed together really well. It wasn't disjointed, and you didn't have to sit there and ponder things as the movie went on. You know, okay, so this explains that, and this explains that. It was it all really fit well together, and had this really, really cool, way of wrapping things up, and I liked how they handled time travel.
Yeah.
And if they did explain it, it was there. And I hate the moments in movies when they have the you know Bob moments, where they have to they sit in there and explain something that all the characters should already know.
Yeah.
It's just for the audience's benefit, and this movie didn't do that. And I really like it when movies do when movies assume you're not stupid.
Yeah.
And I don't like that, but we got to see. I really enjoy Joseph Gordon-Levitt's performance in it because he just really did. He pulled off a good.
He
Bruce
did
Willis.
Bruce Willis, but he added his own flavor to it as well. I liked that a lot about it.
Yeah, it didn't make my.
Go ahead, Ed.
I was gonna say the movie didn't make my top 10. It was in my top 20. It was like number 20.
Mm-hmm.
But I've known Ryan for a long time, and I'm he's a really good guy.
Next time you see him, tell him he's got a fan for life.
Oh yeah, no, I will. I'm sure he knows how many people love the movie, I feel like the same thing. I feel like it was just really strong. I mean, it was a great idea and premise. I love time travel as well. And I guess my only kind of issue, which a lot of people had, was like when it goes to the second half. It completely changes, and that's been a lot of. I didn't hate the second half, but it was such a jarring change.
Yeah, absolutely.
That I kind of had to adjust for that, and then I kind of liked it. I kind of liked the two halves by themselves, but then together, I kind of never felt that it never meshed as well as it could have, like the two different things.
That was overall an excellent movie. I did like it. So that's my number five. What's your number?
Oh, there you go.
Four, Ethan. Right?
My
number five?
We did your number five. It was Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Okay.
So it's Ethan's number four.
All right, my number four. It's going to be. I'm obviously very mainstream on this one, but it's the Avengers. The Avengers is so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the few movies I saw multiple times in theaters this year, and if I actually like it enough to go see it in theater more than once, and that says something to me. And this movie was just a great payoff for the crazy comic book Marvel fan in me. And yes, you could take away a lot of the what the movie's about. And it's obviously this big blockbuster that have made $1 billion and is this huge thing. But it was just such a fun movie, and I think sometimes you just need fun movies to exist so you can go turn your brain off and enjoy them. And this movie did that, but did it really, really well. Because you had this great cast that interacted well, the story was put together well, the movie was directed well. It was just a good, a well put together movie. It was just done perfectly, in my opinion. And I, Aaron, you summed it up best when you said it's not a perfect movie, but it was a perfect Avengers movie.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. It's just. We went on numerous times about Avengers back when it came out. It's such a fun movie. I love it. It's great. It's my number four.
Yeah,
I think I talked about with you guys the comic movies one as well. I think.
Yeah,
we must have talked about it sometime. It was probably like right after it came out as well. But so you guys know how I feel. I mean, it was in my top 20. It was right above Looper actually at number 19.
Mm-hmm.
But not my top 10 because I have a lot of weirder esoteric stuff in my top 10.
Sure, not in my top 10 either.
Oh really? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Don't take it to mean I don't like it, but it is what it is, and I'm not gonna fucking fault it. It's just not in my top 10. There's other I'm not gonna call them weird esoteric, but there's just stuff I liked a little bit better. So I did like Avengers a lot. We've talked about it. I wrote a review. We've talked about a lot about it. So okay. So that's Ethan.
Have you guys seen it again recently? I've seen it. I've thrown in the Blu-ray from time to time, and I still enjoy it.
Yeah. I got the Blu-ray. I watched it when it came out, and that's it. So.
And that's really the key to it for me. It's just an enjoyable movie. I mean, if you need something for background noise, you need something just you want to sit down and say, I just want to enjoy the next 2 hours of my existence.
Yeah.
You can just put this in, and you don't have to overthink it. You just sit there, and you're just having a good time.
Yep.
And that's why I just think there aren't enough of movies like that out there already. And you add on to that with Avengers. I mean, it's just good. It's good for life.
Yeah.
But boy, is it going to be a hard act to follow? I got to tell you, man.
Yeah.
2015, you can't come. 2015 can't come soon enough, but it also is going to be hard act to follow.
You know, I mean, this is going to sound kind of shitty, but I'm not particularly looking forward to Avengers 2 because of the fact that I'm just not looking forward to the public reaction to it. Because I think that people are overreacting to the Avengers. I thought it was very good, but there are people that are calling it, you know, there's some people that want to say it's the best movie of the year, some people best comic book movie ever made. I completely disagree with both those things. So it can go nowhere but down. And, you know, I'll be able to keep my shit about me when Avengers 2 comes out, and if it's even remotely quality, then that's good by me. I just don't want to listen to people about it because I fucking hate that. It's annoying.
It just goes into what you take to the theater with you. If you're just going to be entertained, it's going to be fine. But there's going to be people who are going to be upset and pissy about the next one.
Agreed.
I like the solo Iron Man and Thor movies better, like a hair better.
Agreed.
But, you know, and again, maybe I'll be the feel. Maybe I won't like the Thor sequel as much either for the same reason. But still, I think we'll see.
We'll have to see what happens. What's your number four, Ed?
Okay, my number four is an animated movie, which I'm guessing neither of you saw. It actually was nominated for an Oscar last year, and probably no one saw it since then, even though it was nominated for an Oscar. It's called Chico and Rita.
That's my number 10.
Is it really?
Uh-huh.
No, you're lying.
No, I'm not.
Really?
It's my number 10. I love Chico
and Rita. Oh, awesome. That makes me so happy.
Yep.
Just a little bit about it. It's you can probably talk more about it better than me because
I haven't
seen it in a while. But it's a Spanish language movie. It takes place in the 40s and 50s between Cuba and New York, and it kind of follows a musician and a singer as they kind of have this kind of romance. And it's a beautiful 2D animated film that kind of reminded me of Fantasia and all these great Walt Disney films of the 40s. I was really amazed. I saw it probably in February or March this year.
Yeah.
And it really stuck with me, like, to the point where it ended at my number four for the year.
Yeah. It's really good. I don't really want to give a whole hell of a way about it, but it is on Netflix, so you guys can watch it there if you want to. This is one that I did not see until, I don't know, a month or two ago, something like that. And I'm sort of kind of glad that I didn't, because I would have been kind of mad come the Oscars when Rango won, because I thought this was clearly superior.
I like Rango. I like Rango too, but like Rango was my top 10 last year. But
I like Chico and Rita a lot better. It once again, this is going to be a sloppy comparison, but it kind of reminded me of all the I can't even remember. Is it Ralph Bakshi? Yeah, the Ralph Bakshi anime.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It really reminded me of stuff like that, and I've missed that because, you know, he just doesn't really do stuff anymore, and it was a cool little movie. So yeah, it's my number 10. It's my number 10.
Yeah, it's grown up animation. That's what, like, we don't really see that often here.
Yeah,
and which is why it gets done in Spain and Japan and places like that. But it's an animated film for adults to enjoy, a good story told in animated genre. And it was just, again, I'm glad you guys saw it. The funny thing is, the critics group I'm in, the New York Film Critics Online, they picked that as their animated movie of the year, and I was just so happy.
Yeah.
When that beat out, you know, Paranorman and Frankenweenie and
all that.
These others.
It's a very excellent movie. I actually saw it based off of what you were saying about it last year, and it's totally worth checking out. So yeah, you haven't seen it, right, Ethan?
No.
All right. So that was Ed's number four. We're moving on to my number four.
Sure.
Okay, yeah. I'm gonna lose some people here a little bit because I'm gonna put a movie probably a hell of a lot lower than they expected me to. But it's a movie that is easily one of the three movies I was most looking forward to this year. It's Les Misérables.
Oh, nice.
I really like Les Misérables, but let me walk you through this process. If you listen to our show with any frequency, you know, I was on air being recorded when I found out that Tom Hooper was making Les Misérables, and I was all like, woohoo, really happy looking, because Les Misérables is probably my favorite musical. I've seen it off Broadway. I've read the book. I saw the TV version with Gerard Depardieu. I saw the movie version with Liam fucking Neeson. I've read the book. At one point, I heard that it was going to be the school play when I was in high school, and a girl that I wanted to do nasty things to, I was also really wanting to be in it. And I was like really trying to research the role of son of a bitch, Marius. And, you know, I wanted to play that role. It ended up not happening, and it must have been a rumor. And so I walked into this movie with high expectations, okay? But I'm also walked in very familiar with it. I've been familiar with it for, you know, 15 years or whatever. So, and I'm going to say that I don't know if this would be in my top 10. It probably would, but if it weren't for Anne Hathaway. I've said several times on the podcast before that when Shakespeare in Love won Best Picture over Saving Private Ryan, I broke my fucking TV because I was so angry about that happening. An Oscar like that has not happened that I care that much about until Anne Hathaway in Les Miserables. I think that her part in that movie is probably the, like the 5, 10, 15, whatever you want to call it, minutes of the year, movies-wise. And I'm sitting there next to my wife watching watching Anne Hathaway, okay? I'm familiar with it. I want to keep going back to that. I'm very familiar with it. Ethan and I think that we are a little bit – I don't want to say we're not smarter than anybody, but I think that we saw something in Anne Hathaway just a little bit before everybody else did. We've both been pretty goddamn big fans of her. Most people didn't realize that she was capable of this kind of stuff. So I'm sitting here watching it, and I'm watching it with my kind of like my critic hat on, my I'm familiar with Les Miserables hat on, and so I'm like, and I'm also familiar with I Dream a Dream, and I was kind of wondering what they're going to do with that because of the recent popularity because of Susan Boyle. So I'm sitting there watching, I'm like, oh, I wonder what she's going to be doing with, this verse, and I'm thinking, oh, wow, that's kind of cool how they're keeping it all in a close shot, and, so I'm sitting there thinking, okay, yeah, they're really nailing this, completely with that. I'm criticizing it. I'm studying it, and I look over to my wife. I was going to say something like, I'd hate to be somebody that isn't Anne Hathaway up for the Oscar this year. And I look at her, and it looks like somebody ripped her fucking soul out because it affected her so deep. She hasn't seen it. She hasn't heard it. She didn't know anything about it. And I kind of wish that I could have gotten there, but I didn't because I was so familiar with it. But I thought this was an incredibly good movie. It's my number four. I imagine that most people expect it to be higher, but there's just little things about it that, well, honestly, no, it's a good movie in itself. It just happened to be three I liked more. So yeah, my number four, Les Miserables.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that because I've kind of I saw it. Well, it's really weird because I saw my first experience with Les Mis. I actually saw it on Broadway like in the late 80s, early 90s. It did not affect me that much. It was just a day out with the family. Uh-huh. It was fine. When I was at CinemaCon in Vegas in April, they showed the very first footage from Les Mis, and it included a rough vocal of Anne Hathaway singing I Dreamed a Dream, and I was already like, holy crap, this is going to be a good movie.
Yeah.
And I saw it probably like maybe a week after Thanksgiving, one of those second or third screenings. And I was just blown away. It's my number eight. It didn't make it up higher. It's my number of the year.
Right.
But I agree about Anne Hathaway. I was literally in tears as soon as her mouth started opening. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, Ethan, if we're watching the Oscars together this year, keep anything throwable away from me just in case, okay? Because I will be furious if anybody else wins supporting actress.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's impossible.
I do too. I mean, it's incredible, and I feel very proud of Ethan and I because we were saying – back in the day, before Les Miserables, before Rachel Getting Married, before, this more, critically acclaimed shit that she's really awesome. This is somebody to watch. She's like a new Grace Kelly. Okay. And this is just proving it to everybody.
Yeah.
Now,
is it on your list, Ethan?
So we're going to talk about that one later, right, Ethan?
Okay.
Oh, that's a tip. Yeah. That's a tip on where it ends up on his list.
Yeah. It was a very, very, very excellent movie. I said I'm yeah. It's a great movie, and
I have to say that I'm really impressed that how many guys are putting Les Mis in their top 10 and higher numbers, because it's really funny. I've been the people I've been seeing, like, I thought, because the reviews have not been overwhelmingly great. I mean, some people have been criticizing it.
I think
I've seen it on a lot of top 10 lists of guys who I consider like manly guys.
That's
the
not us.
Well, I don't know. I mean, guys from Kansas City. Our critic in Houston, Josh, he made it his number one movie. I feel like he's into like the manly movies as well. But
I'm going to say this really quick, and then we're going to move on because I'm going to go back to kissing Anne Hathaway's ass a little bit. When I was watching, I Dreamed a Dream, the only thing that I could think – I was trying to explain it to, like, my mom, and I said that the scene reminded me of watching Falconetti in frickin' the Passion of Joan of Arc. I mean, to me, it was that spellbinding. It just blew my mind that they kept it so close on her. This is a musical scene, right? You know, so they can do visual shit with it, and you can't really fault them. But he was smart enough, and he saw what he had to just keep it close on her to just rip your frickin' heart out like it did. And it's a great movie. It's my number four.
That's pretty much one take.
Yeah.
Sung live. Pretty amazing, yeah.
It's something that, I would point out to people. I've only seen it like a week or two ago or what have you, but I'll probably be pointing it out to people for years when they say, I often have people say, I don't really quite get movies as well as you. Like, what's a really good movie or what's a really good performance? I will say watch Anne Hathaway and Les Miserables, and I'll go through that. It's close, and I'll go through the look what she's doing on the second verse here. I mean, it's 5 minutes or whatever that you can study, I think. I think that you could make you could study it very heavily. Okay, so that's my number four. What's your number four, Ed?
Did I get my number four yet? No.
I'm sorry, it would be Ethan's number four.
Well, it'd be my number three.
Excuse me, your number three, son of a...
My number three was Skyfall.
Ah, Skyfall, right. Okay, now what's your number three, Ed?
Okay, my number three is... Actually, I'm not sure if you'd have seen this yet because it hasn't opened wide, but it just opened a couple of weeks ago. It's a movie called The Impossible.
I want to see it. Haven't.
No. It is. It's the second movie by a Spanish filmmaker named Juan Bayona. Long and short, it basically takes place during the 2004 tsunami in Thailand and Southeast Asia, and it's a film about a family, a European family, and it actually was the original. It's based on a real story about a Spanish family that basically got hit. We're in Thailand and got kind of separated by the tsunami. They've kind of rewritten it for a British couple, Naomi Watts and Hugh McGregor. And it basically just, you watch this family arriving in Thailand, going on a holiday vacation there. And within like 10, 15 minutes, you see the tsunami. They basically recreated what it was like being in the tsunami. And it's a huge, big money shot, effect spectacle. And then it becomes just about the family being separated and trying to find each other and the real emotions that come with that of, my mother might not live and, I need to find my father. Maybe they're dead already. I don't know. And it's just this whole story about following it. And I think what really makes it is, Naomi Watts is great. I mean, she's going to get an Oscar nominations for sure.
I think Ewan McGregor may. I can't say.
Yeah,
he got the Golden Globe nomination. I mean, I guess it just depends on it just depends on how people are affected these next couple of weeks.
Actually, but he didn't get it for that though. He got it for a different movie.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I think what really, I mean, Naomi Watts is just amazing. What really blew me away was a young actor named Tom Holland, who I think his only previous anything was playing Billy Elliot on stage. And he plays the eldest son, and he holds his own against Naomi Watts. And that, I mean, for any actor to hold their own against Naomi Watts is pretty amazing. But just watching this movie, and again, there've been a lot of criticisms about it because it's not about the Asian people and what happened to the people who live there and the destruction. It's about a family, and it's about a family in this big destruction and how they survive and get through it. And I was blown away. I've seen it twice. It was one of the movies I went to see during Hurricane Sandy or during the after effects of Hurricane Sandy, which was probably not the best idea, but
probably not.
But I did go.
Probably not.
But I went to go see it, and I loved it. I hope you guys will check it out when it comes there.
Yeah, it's one I want to see, so I probably will check it out, especially with such a high recommendation.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead.
But it's going to be Sir.
Yeah.
Sir Ewan McGregor.
No. You're doing it again, motherfucker. It's going to be CBE. He's getting OBE. He's not getting knighted.
OBE,
he's
right.
Getting an order of a Brit.
Okay.
Yeah, we went over this with Suchet.
David
Suchet. And I'm like, we went back and, but yeah, anyway. Yeah, I want to see it. I want to see it.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. I mean, again, I hope, I'm really kind of bummed out that some people really kind of went into it saying, we don't want to see white people problems, because there were people there. There were tourists who were there who, I don't know. I feel like some people were expecting a different movie, but I was blown away by it, especially having seen. Have you seen The Orphanage, either one of you?
Yeah. Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Wait, that's the director. That's the director.
Oh, really? Cool.
Oh, yeah.
I could.
And you will not get. You will not know it by seeing the movie because it's such a huge step forward. So.
Okay. Well, moving on to my number three, it's another one where I'm going to lose people because it's a movie that'll. I don't know. I'm looking at it on Rotten Tomatoes. It looks like people liked it better than I thought it did. It just maybe my circle they didn't. But it's The Dark Knight Rises. I picked it from a number three. And what's funny is I've been building this list all year. But I was filing the edges off and stuff about a week ago. And I had my 10 built. And then I'm like, I was looking and I didn't have this on here. And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with me? Because then I started looking at it. And I started thinking about the fact that, first off, it's got Morgan fucking Freeman in it. It's got, it's got Liam fucking Neeson in it, barely, but he is fucking in it. It's got almost Gary fucking Oldman, and it's got potentially Joseph Gordon fucking Levitt in it. So, I mean, this is a movie that it's going to speak to me, because it's got a lot of these people I like, and I love Nolan. I think he's a very, very, very excellent director. I like this movie. Some people had the problems with it. Honestly, I think the problems that most people have is nitpicky bullshit, and they should shut up about it. But that's neither. It is. I mean, honestly, if you don't want to like it, don't like it. That's fine. But if you're going to be a nitpicky ass face about it, then whatever. If you don't like it, okay. But don't say this movie sucks because of the fact that Batman got over a broken back too quickly. That's just being stupid. Say, I don't like it because of XYZ. I can live with that. But if you try to do nitpicky, I'm going to break you. I like this movie a lot. It's the only movie on here that I own that says something to me. At the same time, I liked it. A hell of a lot. I actually liked it better than The Dark Knight, but why don't we go back to the fact that I liked Batman Begins better than The Dark Knight? I mean, it just spoke to me as a Batman fan, and I thought that this was honestly more of a sequel to Batman Begins than The Dark Knight, and I liked it a lot. I've talked a hell of a lot about it, so it's my number three. So, whatever. Guys.
Go ahead, Ed. No, I was going to say, because I don't know if we have talked to you, either of you guys, about this movie.
I've read your review.
I'm not sure if I have or not, but I liked it. I mean, I thought I gave it an 8 out of 10 when I reviewed it, which is definitely a positive. It's not glowing. I had problems with it. I had problems with the pacing, with the, some of the meandering story. It was not.
I'll listen to you on that, but I'm not going to listen. I mean, I'm not saying that you're saying any of this stuff. I'll listen to the pacing. I'll listen to stuff like that. But when people are saying stuff like they made it, like I had this guy I wanted to punch in the face that said that the movie sucked because they made up the character of Talia for this movie. I'm like, obviously you don't know what you're talking about, so no. Shut up.
I was really surprised. Huh. I didn't know so much. I mean, I actually, bought I had the original Bane appearance.
Uh-huh.
And I guess I haven't read enough Batman to know that Bane and the Bane and Talia had, that there was that connection. Like, I didn't know that from the comics.
Yeah, after Ra's al Ghul gave up on Bruce, he moved on to Bane as being his successor.
Right.
Yeah,
like, I never knew that part of the story.
Yeah, there's also other people that are like, oh, they shoehorned that shit in there. Like,
yeah, when I wrote my review, I didn't realize that. I thought it was good. I thought I was looking forward to Tom Hardy as Bane.
He was good.
I felt like the voice thing really kind of.
You still didn't like the voice, huh?
Well, I can understand it at least, but I thought it was like not the right voice.
I loved his voice, but that's something, whatever. Right. But I loved his voice, and
I love Catwoman.
Anne Hathaway. I got two Anne Hathaways on here.
Absolutely.
But
now we know the truth. Now we know the truth of how you decide your top 10.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have another movie this year that you're going to be number two or no?
Nope. Wow, I just lost my complete. Oh, I nominated Joseph Gordon-Levitt for Ruth Oz, Ethan. If like let's just say like I know it wasn't going to happen, but if somebody else chose him and I had to break out my second one would have been Tom Hardy because I thought he was very awesome. So
if you were just going on a bit about Dark Knight Rises, I love it. It's number 8.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It was good.
Okay.
But really, the thing that made this movie for me was it. It wasn't Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It wasn't Liam Neeson. It wasn't any of those. It was Tom fucking Hardy.
He was pretty fucking great.
He was just great, I thought. He played this really sinister, great villain.
He was an asshole, wasn't he?
Yes.
It's funny. I was watching that. I remember walking out of it thinking, man, Bane is a jerk. I mean, I know he's a bad guy, but he's a jerk.
that wasn't acting, though. You guys have to be Tom Hardy. That wasn't acting.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, he had great presence in the movie, and it just was beyond something I loved. So it was Dark Knight Rises. It was number 8. So I liked it a lot.
Yep.
Yeah. It wasn't in my top 10. Wasn't or 25. In my top 25. And I got a lot of shit for not even giving it an honorable mention.
It was cracking me the fuck up reading the comments on that list. I was laughing so hard at that.
Did you see? I don't know if you saw my terrible 25.
Yes, and number 1, Dark Knight Rises. Just kidding.
I had to fuck with them.
Yeah, you did. It was great. It cracked me the hell up. It cracked me.
Although I have to say that from my list of top movies by studio, it was either Dark Knight Rises or Cloud Atlas for Warner Brothers.
I pointed that out, yeah.
But the fact that neither of them made the list kind of knows that it was like probably like number 40 or something. So.
Sure.
Very good, very good. Okay, moving on. Ethan, what's your number 2?
My number 2 was Looper.
Ah, right. Huh? Ed, number 2.
Okay, yeah. I guess now we're at the point where Ethan's like already talking about the ones we already know he's going to talk about. But yeah, my number 2 is a movie you may not have seen. I don't know. I'm not going to. After Chico and Rita, I'm not going to assume anything. But it's a French movie called The Untouchables, which I saw.
No,
it's directed by Olivier Nakache and Eric Toledano, who I don't know if I can pronounce their names. But I basically saw this completely out of the blue. It was a part of a program called Rendezvous with French Cinema. And usually I'm not a big fan of French films. I don't know if it's just – I mean, once in a while I'll always have at least one or two in my top 25, but I feel like they're all French films are the same in some ways, and I really kind of jaded a bit about that because I see a French movie and I'm like, oh, it's gonna be a lot of talking, a lot of like, you know, I mean, there's the dramas and the comedies. The Untouchables is something very different because I feel like there's only one other French movie I've seen that would made me feel like this could be an American film, except it was just in French, and it was. That's the name of the movie, The Untouchables, and it's basically a buddy comedy between a paralyzed or I think a quadriplegic millionaire and an ex-convict who kind of becomes his caretaker. And it's made $400 million worldwide, only 10 of that in the States. So obviously I'm not crazy. Obviously everyone in the rest of the world agrees with me, but yeah, I was really impressed with it. I've seen it 3 times, and it's really a must-see movie. It's really heartwarming, very funny. It reminded me of Trading Places a little bit. It's a Trading Places kind of thing, which was a very big, which I know was a very big inspiration for. Oh, what's that?
That's Ethan's wife, it sounds like.
Okay.
Yeah, this is something that I saw on your top 10 list, and I looked up your review, and it sounded great. I do want to see it, but I haven't seen it yet. I don't imagine you've seen it, Ethan.
I haven't seen it, but I am familiar with it at least.
Yeah.
We talked about it for a parking place I interviewed at during the summer.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Did it play over there or?
Yeah. We had some screenings of it out here.
Okay.
Very cool. Very cool. But
it's great. I mean, it's funny. It was like one of those movies that I kind of was very. I don't know why. I was just kind of. I think because the Weinstein Company picked it up like even before it got released, that I was like a little tentative. Like, oh, they just want to have another artist, you know? But. It's a great movie, you know. I hope whoever makes it in English, which is Paul Feig of Bridesmaids is doing the remake. So I hope I wish them luck, but they have a really good movie they're trying to, you know, remake. So
cool. Well, here's hoping. I do want to see it. All right, moving on to my number 2, big shocker of the year. My number 2 is Django Unchained. I love Quentin Tarantino unashamedly, unabashedly. Every movie that he makes, I love probably more than it deserves. But for whatever reason, they always play into my funny bone. I mean, this is a movie that just that grabbed me specifically, you know, by the nuts the second the credits started rolling. I mean, it's not something you can say about Tarantino. He doesn't waste a whole hell of a lot of screen time. At least he doesn't try to. And like one of those things that he does that I always wonder why more. It seems like more directors don't do is they don't really utilize the credits, but that's something that he does well. You know, he'll use fun fonts. He'll use, you know, interesting music. He does stuff like, it was always fun watching, like, say, you know, just for instance, like this one, it was fun to see, Sergio Leone's name in there. Or, God, son of a bitch, not Sergio Leone.
The original. You mean the original Django guy?
Yeah, like names like that that are going to jump out at you if you're familiar with this. It's a movie that I liked a hell of a lot. I was expecting to like a hell of a lot, but I liked it a hell of a lot more than I was thinking I was going to, because I started reading some reviews and some people didn't like it. But I was like, you know, and fuck Spike Lee. I don't care what he says about it. But one of the things I liked about it was the last shootout in the movie, because you have this weird. You know, he called it his Southern. It was like a kind of an exploitation spaghetti Western movie, you know, set like right before the American Civil War. But the last shootout in the movie felt like a Hong Kong action movie. And it was a lot of fun. It had all your typical Tarantino tropes. You had Sam Jackson in there, who was very fucking funny, by the way. You had Michael Parks popping up in there. You had like the fun use of the title cards at some points in the movie. Movie I really liked a lot. It was 2 hours and 50 minutes and it didn't feel like it to me, so I liked it a lot. So it's my number two.
That's more. It's funny. That's more the kind of movie I was expecting from you guys rather than Les Mis. So
no, I love Les Mis.
I haven't seen Django Unchained yet, and I'm hoping I'm going to get the chance to see it sometime next week.
It's worth seeing, Ethan. I liked it.
I totally, really, really want to see this movie. I mean, I love westerns, and I love Quentin Tarantino, so I'm like, I just need to see it.
It's definitely worth seeing. It was in my top 25. I'm not sure if it got. I'm not sure. I mean, I've seen it twice. Actually, it was really weird because this year I've seen two movies twice within a course of a week.
Mm-hmm.
Prometheus was the first one, which I saw literally like 2 days apart from each other. I saw it twice. And then Django I ended up seeing on a Wednesday and then seeing it again on a Saturday just because I kind of already made plans to see it and I kind of just saw it twice. So, So Django Unchained is. In my top 25, but not in my top 10.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, it was fated to be high on my list because I just love Tarantino, probably more than I should. But I love him, so.
No, he's still doing good movies. He's, you know, he takes his time, but he gets them right, you know.
Yeah, he sure does.
By the way, Spike Lee was my number two worst movie. Spike Lee's movie was my number two worst movie of the year, so I just want to say that.
Yeah.
But Spike Lee, so don't, you know, Spike Lee should be throwing out criticisms.
Yeah, yeah, especially when he doesn't, you know, watch the movie. That was kind of my beef about it, you know, hey. Okay, at this point, we're down to our number one. But I asked both of these guys to do something. We're going to go through and we're going to say what we thought was the worst movie we saw this year. I did it more for their benefit than mine because, you know, they had to see these movies for work, so they had to see movies that they wouldn't see otherwise, and so it goes against what they wanted. But, you know, me, you know, I still got a stinker in there. So, Ethan, what was the worst movie you saw this year?
Well, I said it before, I'll say it again. You know, it all goes into the expectations you bring into the theater. And you know, this is a year that I, you know, I saw several movies that I didn't want to see, including the Adam Sandler, That's My Boy, and the Step Up Revolution.
Nice.
But
that came out this year. Wow. I definitely avoided that bullet then.
But I mean, it all goes into what I always take into account what the demographic or what the target audience is for a movie, and I'm not the target audience for either of those movies, and so it's understandable that I didn't like them. So really, with that in mind, I basically made my list, and I looked at the movie that I am the target audience for that just didn't do it for me. And like I said, there's no movie that I saw this year that I actively despise and loathe.
There's no Tree of Life this year.
No, there's no Tree of Life this year. But this movie was a movie that was very much a should have been an Ethan movie, but wasn't. And it was Lockout.
See, I didn't see it.
Oh,
It's on Netflix. And that's not a good sign.
No, and you know, I like Guy Pearce. The idea of the movie was it could have been a real fun movie, you know, but it was just so stupid. And, you know, it was unabashedly a bad remake of, we got a lot of bad remakes that weren't remakes this year. And, this one was a bad remake of Escape from LA, obviously. And, this one just, you know, it could have just been, you know, cheese ball entertaining, you know, shit blown up, having a good time, but it was just so boring and stupid. And, you know, when you're sitting in there watching this movie that's supposed to be a mindless action movie, and you're sitting there going, okay, this is just dumb. He apparently falling through the atmosphere takes about 3 seconds, and then he's fine, and then the police arrive in 2 seconds and they're there. This movie just didn't do anything for me. They wrote the script with crayons on a napkin, I'm sure. And
they had a script? Whoa.
I know. And you know, when you get into things in this movie, and if you ever watch it, I mean, they have things in here like the low orbit police department.
LOPD.
What the hell? Yeah, and
this is one I didn't see because it looked stupid, and then I heard it was even stupider than it looked. I'm like, oh my god!
And I went to this movie expecting turn off your brain, watch stuff explode, and I was sorely disappointed because there wasn't enough wise ass comments and stuff exploding, and I was just totally, entirely disappointed with it. I can't recommend to enough people not to see this movie.
Yeah,
and I know that. They put out the extended version on DVD. I don't even care.
Awesome. By the way, I don't know if I probably should mention this at this point, because as soon as you said the title, I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen that movie. And in fact, I gave a quote for that movie. And in fact, my quote's on the DVD because I like the movie so much. So fuck you, Ethan.
I hated it. Okay.
I know. I liked it. I don't know. I think it's funny. I got a hard time about my quote, because my quote was something like, you know, oh, and you're gonna love this one. It was like something like Blade Runner meets Die Hard. That was my quote.
We're gonna break format here, because my worst movie of the year is you can get back to it if you haven't said enough, but I have to get this in here. My worst movie of the year is a movie that I saw because it had an Ed Douglas quote on it as well. It was Silent House. That movie was a piece of shit.
You know, I gotta say, I didn't give permission for that quote.
Sue them. Because
I didn't give the permission for the quote. Yeah.
I saw it was. I think it said Elizabeth Olsen is fantastic. Ed Douglas coming soon. And so exactly. I saw it, and honestly, I didn't see it because of Ed, but I saw it because Rachel wanted to see it, and it was. And again, I didn't hate it that much, honestly, but I didn't like it. But go figure. It was one of those movies that was trying to be experimental and it failed. It kind of reminded me in the sense of, like, you know, the Blair Witch Project, but they wish they did that kind of money. You know, they did like the whole big one. They tried to do one big long shot, but you know, I could feel the digital edits. So yeah. So
yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I steered you both wrong, basically.
No, Ethan saw Lockout because that's the kind of movie he would like. This one, yeah. I saw because my wife wanted to see, but I did see the trailer. I'm like, hey, I know that motherfucker. You know, just, but it's funny. But yeah,
you have to admit that Elizabeth Olsen has a nice rack, and you can.
Well, she's got a nice rack, but this wasn't porn.
You watch it for 90 minutes, watching all these cleavage shots of Elizabeth Olsen. It's worth it for that alone.
Yeah, I would watch. I'd rather watch Macy May Marlene. You know, I mean, if I got to watch Lizzie Olsen, but you know, this I didn't like it. It isn't the worst movie I've ever seen. I didn't like, you know, actively despise it as much as I did a couple of movies I saw last year. But you know, okay, it's the worst movie I saw this year.
You know, it's funny because they actually they changed the ending of the movie probably for the theatrical release. I saw it at Sundance the same year I saw Martha Marcy May Marlene, and it was they had a better ending, and it wasn't a good ending. So.
Oh really?
Like, I don't think that the ending was, but like I like the concept of it, and I liked Lockout. I thought it was fun. So
okay.
Anyway. we're talking movies I was forced to see. I'm gonna have to go with Snow White and the Huntsman.
See, yeah, I completely forgot about that. Yeah, that sucked too. Yeah.
We had a lot of pretty movies this year. Yeah.
I want to see Snow White again. I actually didn't hate it. But I didn't give a quote for it. But
yeah, I just didn't care about that one.
My quote for it was it was a bad remake of Willow.
Yeah, I remember that.
The people I was with went, "What's Willow?" And I said, "Get out of my head. Just go away. Just go."
I sent you guys a link to my Lockout.
I saw that. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
But anyway, so my number one worst movie of the year was. Like, I'm not sure if either of you saw it, but it's Tim and Eric's $1 billion movie.
Yeah, that sucked so much.
It was just like not. I mean, it wasn't even a movie. It was like they basically someone who saw their show said, "Hey, let's give these guys some money to make a movie, and they can get all sorts of people like Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis and Will Forte and John C. Reilly to appear in it." And it was just boring, crap, unwatchable, no redeeming qualities whatsoever. I mean. I didn't have to see it for work, but as soon as I saw it, I was like, I'm not going to see anything worse than this year.
You saw it pretty early on, right?
I saw it back in January, probably right before Sundance, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that, actually.
Which movie is it?
Tim and Eric's billion-dollar movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Yeah.
It wasn't good. Yeah, yeah, so these are movies that you should not see, guys. So don't see these movies unless you want to listen to Ed and, you know, Die Hard meets whatever. So, yeah. So, okay. Why don't we talk about movies that we like now? Ethan, number one.
Well, it's already been hinted at. My number one's Les Mis.
I figured it was. I saw you gushing about it.
I had the benefit of actually the Broadway tour actually came through Kansas City at the beginning of December, and I took my wife to go see it because it's her favorite musical. Now, I had never seen it before. I had never seen any of the movies. I've never read anything about it. I knew nothing about Les Mis. And I thought the stage production was just gorgeous. It was wonderful. It was beautiful. And my wife was very skeptical going in to see Les Miserables at theaters. And I was like, you know, it's directed by Tom Hooper. And it's got, Anne Hathaway and Russell Crowe, and it's got Hugh Jackman in it. I'm really optimistic. So we went and saw this movie on Christmas Day, and obviously I was blown away by it. And it is, like you said, it might be the Gladiator between you and me this year.
That's what I kind of was wondering if that was going to – because I liked it better than I like Gladiator.
Sure.
But, I mean, I wasn't saying, it's okay. I thought this was excellent. It just – but
and this coming from a guy who used – me, I used to say I didn't like musicals, and I just absolutely loved this movie. It was one I turned to my wife after the movie was done, saying, okay, we're totally getting this on Blu-ray when it comes out. It's like day it comes out, it's ours. And I am not ashamed to say, and I don't consider myself a big manly man or anything like that.
Good.
That I cried at the end of this movie. I mean,
at
the end.
Huh.
It is such a powerful movie. And I thought that Tom Hooper did it such justice. That, if you can't see the stage show, see the movie. But if you can see the stage show, then see the movie. The only thing I was worried about going into this was Russell Crowe. And he did just an amazing job.
Our buddy Noah was kind of saying that he sucked. And I don't agree.
People generally in that movie, people generally come down on Russell Crowe.
I thought he was good.
I don't think his singing voice was great. But I thought that his singing voice worked for the character. I think that's what, if he sung like an angel, it would really take it away from the character.
No, and Javert is just an interesting character, and he did a real good job of playing him, but not being this bad guy, you know? Because that's not what Javert was.
No, I was talking to Noah. I'm sorry to throw him under the bus like this, but
sure.
I was talking to Noah about it, and he said that he didn't think that Russell Crowe has the emotional depth to play a character like Javert. I said, well, first off, I disagree with you, because I do think that Russell Crowe can be a very good actor. I do think that he hasn't been trying that, or at least it hasn't been coming across. He's been trying too hard lately. But at the same time, Javert is not the kind of character that needs to have a lot of emotional depth, because Javert is a character who's going through fucking arrested development. I mean, as soon as Jean Valjean got out of prison, you know, he was, you know, following him because he wanted to catch him, you know, slipping up. And as soon as he realized that something was going on here, his fucking life was on hold. You know, he transferred so he could try to, try to get this guy, and so he became, you know, singularly obsessed. So he isn't going to have this vast array of emotion. He's going to be must get Jean Valjean, must get Jean Valjean. And I thought that all the criticisms of Russell Crowe were unfair. I mean, he might be a dickhead. Oh, yeah. He might not have been trying very hard lately, but I thought he was very good in this. So go ahead.
Well, it's funny at first when he first saw, because he was the first person to kind of do the singing talking thing, which is kind of what throws people off. And that was kind of weird, strange to begin with, but I think that kind of hurt it, because his two main songs were great. I loved his two songs were good, but I mean, I thought he was like next to after Javier Bardem, he was definitely, or maybe in Loki, I guess he'd be like the third or fourth best villain of the year, I thought. But
and that's just the thing, is he's not he himself isn't this villainous character. As he's doing what he thinks is right, and it's not, you know, he doesn't go off, you know, off in the background and eat babies and step on puppies.
Yeah.
This movie, there was no one in this movie that I was really disappointed in.
I would have liked to see somebody stronger than Amanda Seyfried.
See,
maybe. I think she's good.
And don't take that to mean she sucked, but sure. she was supposed to be like the emotional grounding of that movie. And you know, first off, you had all that stolen in the first 45 minutes by Anne Hathaway. And then you have the young what's her name?
Eponine.
You had the young Eponine, and that little girl was awesome.
You're talking about the little girl who played Cosette.
The young Cosette. You know, that little girl was awesome, and Amanda Seyfried was fine, but compared to that little girl, you know, and that's not a real criticism. I would have liked to see somebody stronger. If I had to pick the weakest actor out of it, I would say her. I also want to get this in here real quick, because I forgot to say before, I thought Eddie Redmayne was fucking fantastic in this movie.
Yeah.
I think he should definitely get an Oscar. So good.
I mean, he held his own against Samantha Barks, and I don't know if you knew, but Samantha Barks performed the role on stage.
Yeah.
So she actually had the
25th anniversary. Yeah.
Yeah. And she actually had experience. And he came on and did this amazing, you know, songs.
So charismatic too.
Yeah. I think he's really grown on me. He's Eddie Redmayne. Something happened the last couple of years between this and My Weekend with Marilyn, where he kind of, he's really kind of grown into his skin. He used to be very awkward and weird.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
Completely agree.
And for the record, you know, what you were talking earlier about Anne Hathaway, I mean, I completely agree.
I was going to ask you if I'm overselling that, because obviously
Anne Hathaway, collectively she may be in the movie for 15 minutes, but damn, those are a fabulous 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And that scene where she is singing Dream a Dream, and the camera is just right up close on her.
Brave is that?
Yeah, and that scene, it's just so you see her emotion, and the way that they filmed that movie, and the way that Tom Hooper did it is, I think, just really amazing. And just the way that they had the live singing, and they had the earpieces and the piano off playing music for them, that sort of thing, was absolutely amazing. And the way that it flowed well together, and Anne Hathaway just really rips your heart out.
I kind of felt bad saying anything to Rachel, because she was still dealing with it. I talked to her later, and she was all like, I wasn't going to do it, but I had half a mind to leave to process what I just saw. And I'm all like, holy crap.
Good. One of the nice things is they sent out screeners of the movie, literally almost the same time they actually screened it. So I saw it on this big screen, but then I got to watch it again and go to moments I liked and watch on the screener a week later. So
it's a fantastic movie. Before I saw it, I mean, Looper was firmly at my number one, actually.
Yeah.
Then this one came out, and I was like, yeah, no contest.
I'm
completely blown away by Les Miserables, and I would go see it again. And I saw it Christmas Day, and then my wife and I went and saw it again on the 26th. I mean, we loved it that much.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if you hadn't seen Django, if you saw Django, I mean, that might be in your top five as well. But I guess
I know how Ethan is. I think Ethan will like Django Unchained, but there's no way it's going to top Les Miserables for him.
Okay.
So
that's good to know.
Not a chance. Okay. Moving on to your number one, Ed.
Okay, now I have to give a caveat, because I did last year, I tend to have two number one movies. Like, I have a documentary, and then I have a Nun doc. So I'll just briefly talk about the Nun doc, if that's okay. I mean, I'll talk about the doc. Let me talk about the doc first, I should say. Because actually, the first time we talked, I think, was for, or the second time was for documentary top 10.
Mm-hmm.
So my number one doc of the year is a movie called Searching for Sugar Man. Which, I don't know, have you ever heard of it, or?
No. We don't get a lot of documentaries out in Kansas City, sadly. So.
No, okay. It's worth seeing if you get a chance. It's a doc about, I don't want to say too much about what it's about, but it's about a musician from the 70s who kind of, like, no one ever heard of him, but he kind of, like, his records kind of started being passed around, and he ended up, like, his record ended up going to South Africa, and it ended up, like, causing a bit of a movement there, and it's a really fascinating story. I thought it was an amazing doc, an amazing movie. It probably would have been my number one if another movie hadn't come along. So yeah, so that's Searching for Sugar Man is my number one doc.
I haven't got a chance to see it yet, but that is something I did want to see.
Yeah, the only thing I'd give a caveat also is that my number one doc last year was Being Elmo, and we saw what happened with that, so I'm a little worried about the Rodriguez now after that. But so Searching for Sugar Man, my number one nun doc, and this is like literally this is probably my number one movie of the year, is Ang Lee's Life of Pi. Have you gotten a chance to see it? Or
I haven't. I wanted to, but I haven't got to see it yet.
It's one I really have zero desire to see. It looks very pretty. It just doesn't look like a movie I would enjoy.
You would think so.
It looks like a movie I would enjoy, and I just haven't got a chance to see it yet because it's not playing close to me.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it isn't really playing close to me right now, so I'd have to drive like 40 miles to see it, and I don't think I want to see it that much. So.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's also it's also a 3D movie, and it should be seen in 3D, which means Ethan will probably not get the full experience.
Yeah.
It's basically Ang Lee. It's based on Yann Martell's bestseller, which actually it was a big bestseller back in the early, I think it's like 2000, 2001. It's all about this Indian kid who gets stranded on a boat with a tiger, and it sounds like the most boring,
Jungle Book on a boat.
Basically, it sounds like the most boring premise ever, and it's just really, it reminded me of, like, Slumdog Millionaire, it reminded me of, like, Hugo, it reminded me of all these movies that I loved, and even things like Titanic. It had, like, a big, huge boat sinking, which I thought was up there with Titanic. It was just an amazing movie from beginning to end. It had, like, a spiritual aspect, which, you can take or leave, depending on your, on your preferences, but, I think just the kid he found, this newcomer Suraj Sharma, really held the movie. He was the movie. It was him, and a tiger. And the tiger was a kind of a combination of live tiger and CG, completely seamless. I thought it's nearly a perfect movie in my book, and that's why it's my number one of the year.
I want to see it based off of the strength of, like, I saw that you put it that high, but also just based on the strength that it's Ang Lee. Ang Lee is good far more often than he isn't. So, yeah, I do want to see it. I just haven't got to. I'm not going to say I tried that hard, but I was going to try to see it before the show came up. I just didn't get a chance to. But
yeah, it's a shame. I mean, not many people put it up that high in their year list. I feel like I'm very much kind of out on a limb with that movie as my number one.
Everybody I've talked to that saw liked it quite a bit.
Yeah, but it's not on many, not on many top 10 lists. Number one, I saw it, I gave it a 9.5 out of 10. I saw it again, completely backed up my feelings on the movie, and I'm, I like Lockout and Silent House, though, whatever.
Yeah.
But I really think it needs to be seen in the theater with 3D. That's how it was made.
I don't have a problem with 3D. Well, I have a problem with 3D as, okay, let's make this movie now. Why don't we up convert it to 3D so we can make a couple extra bucks? I don't like it like that, but there are people that, like, flat out refuse to see a movie in 3D. I'm not that guy. Because, I think 3D, I don't know. There's been movies I've liked the 3D in. This is one that I wanted to see in 3D. If I do that, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to have to drive to Kansas City to see it, and, we'll have to see what happens. But it's one I am interested in, Ed. And I've heard good things about the book, too. I have wanted to read it for a while.
Did you guys see Avengers in 3D by any chance?
It was subtle.
I saw it. My wife and I went to the Mighty Marvel marathon thing, so.
Oh, nice.
It's all right.
Yeah, I saw
3D, and it's the thing with me in 3D is unless the movie is
shot in
3D with 3D in mind, I just don't think it's worth it.
Yeah.
Life of Pi would probably be one I would see in 3D then, because it's with 3D in mind. But ones that are like a lot of the converted movies, I'm just not interested in seeing those.
I think every movie that came on my list, at least every movie that came out, every movie that came out, I'm looking at my list. Every movie that came out that had like a special, if it was 3D. If it was, IMAX, if it was 48 frames a second, every one of those, I saw that way. I saw the way that they intended. And that's one I don't think is going to end up happening, which sucks because I like seeing 3D that's done not as an afterthought. So. Yeah.
Well, the good thing is maybe if it gets nominated for an Oscar, maybe in January, maybe Fox will put it out, put it back in some more theaters.
I hope so.
It made like $85 million so far, maybe a little bit more, and it has made a ton of money. It's I think it's worth seeing. I think it's worth seeing in the theaters, if you can.
Okay. Okay, well, very good. This is kind of weird. We're getting down to my number one, and I think I've thrown out all the ones that you guys would expect to be on my list. What do you guys think is my number one? Do you have any idea?
Is not one of the movies that we've already discussed.
No,
right?
No, it hasn't come up on anybody's list either.
Okay, let me think. is it? Well, let's see. You wouldn't have seen Zero. I'm gonna guess this now.
Okay, guess.
You wouldn't have seen Zero Dark Thirty yet, because it hasn't come out yet.
Okay.
Let's see. Is it Cabin in the Woods?
No, but that's my number seven.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Well, that's a pretty good guess then. Okay.
Any idea, Ethan?
I know you really liked The Gray, but I don't think
that's
you
not it.
Put it up at number one. Uh-uh. So,
if I had a number 11, The Gray would be my number 11, but no.
Sure.
No?
Oh, let me think. Wait,
okay.
Let me have one more thought.
All right.
I just think what movies came out. The Master?
I don't think it's no. Fuck no. Okay. No, it's. I don't think it's near anybody's top of the year. And I'm not gonna argue that it's a better movie than a lot of these movies we've talked about. But it's probably my favorite. It's Lincoln.
Oh, nice. I swear to God, I was literally at my list. I was about to guess that.
Yeah.
I was
okay.
About to guess that. Oh well.
I still haven't seen it.
I fucking loved Lincoln. Now, I want you to bear in mind a couple of things, okay? First off, I always say that the day that I see a movie will have an effect on it. I had a really good day that day, so we got that going on. I kind of have a Civil War thing with my mom. My mom's always been into the Civil War, and I'm into history and stuff like that, so it's something that my mother and I have in common. So, you know, we have that going for it. Yeah, it's got Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it. That's beside the fucking point. I mean, he was in that movie less than Anne Hathaway was in Les Miserables. But it's a go ahead.
No, I was laughing at you.
Yeah. It's true. But first off, this is a movie that at one point, I mean, it wasn't very long. It was in between Liam Neeson leaving the role and Daniel Day-Lewis picking up the role that I lost some faith in it. Because I'm like, ah, shit, that means that Liam Neeson ended up leaving the role. He said he was too old or something. I bet he probably just got tired of waiting or, you know, something like that. Yeah. And then I'm like, God damn it, because, you know, I thought Liam Neeson would have been a really good Abraham Lincoln. And, you know, I really like Steven Spielberg. And then I'm like, fuck, okay, whatever. Then, I don't know, a week, month, whatever, later, they said Daniel Day-Lewis is playing. I'm like, well, shit. You know, if somebody has to replace, you know, Liam Neeson, Daniel Day-Lewis works for me. And so I kind of got on this, I don't know, call it a high horse if you want to this year. I was getting really goddamn fucking sick of the hyperbole against Steven Spielberg. It just makes me so angry that people are like, yeah, fuck Steven Spielberg because... I don't know why they say it, honestly. You know, they're all like, you know, I didn't like War Horse, so fuck him, fuck E.T., and fuck Indiana Jones, and fuck Jaws. I'm like, where is your brain on here? They just seem to want to be... They just seem to want to be contrarian. I think Steven Spielberg... I think that once Steven Spielberg is dead, I think that he'll be considered the greatest director of all time. I think that right now they're not going to go there because, you know, there's your Hitchcocks, your John Fords, you know, whatever. But I think Steven Spielberg is awesome. Now, with this movie, Steven Spielberg has a reputation of the studio movie. I mean, he owns his own goddamn studio. I mean, the dude's, you know, a billionaire. And literally, he's a billionaire. He's got over $1 billion. And so you have all this stuff going on with this movie. It's a movie set in the Civil War based off of a book about Lincoln. And so, you know, walking into it, at least hearing about it, you're thinking, okay, so this is a movie that's going to be some Civil War stuff, so Steven Spielberg's going to have his pretty set pieces, and, you know, there's going to be some Lincoln backdrop. That wasn't that movie. This movie was literally a movie about people talking to each other. And I thought that was so cool, because they were talking about the 13th Amendment and, like, all the problems going on between the North and the South in the Civil War. I think that... I don't feel it's a slam dunk that Daniel Day-Lewis is going to win his third Oscar, but I think it's possible.
I think it's a slam dunk.
I think he should, but I think
Hugh Jackman might be like
maybe
edging closer, but I think Daniel Day-Lewis is going to take it.
Yeah. And it's also, this is a movie, or well, this is almost neither here nor there, but a lot of people like to bitch about the Oscars, like, oh, they fucking suck. I say, you know what? Shut up. Because let's say that there's one actress out there who should have three Oscars. Who is it? Yeah, Meryl Streep. Okay, she does. Okay, who's one actor? Daniel Day-Lewis. Oh, yeah, he does. So they kind of get it right more than they don't. Yeah. And on top of that, this movie had one of the most stellar stellar B C list cast I've ever seen in my life. It had, you know, obviously it had Daniel Day-Lewis, but it also had, you know, Sally Field, who was a hell of a lot better, and I thought she was going to be. She's a little old for the role, but that's neither here nor there. Tommy Lee Jones, the first time that I've liked him in something in a long time. You know, once again, I like Joseph Gordon-Levitt was in it. I love him, but he didn't really do much for me in this movie. But you also just had just tons and tons and tons and tons of people. It's a movie that I absolutely loved. I will buy this because I like Steven Spielberg's special features. I kind of wish he would do some commentary tracks. He doesn't. Oh well. But this is a movie that I loved, and it's a good one, and it's my number one. So yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely in my top 20. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I saw
personal really things pushed it to my number one. I get that.
Yeah. No, but I saw. Again, like most of the movies I got to see very early on, I saw like a kind of work in progress that which was looked pretty much done.
Yeah.
But I thought it was amazing. I think it was great. Daniel Day-Lewis. I know people didn't like his voice at first, but I thought it was really worked.
I loved his voice.
Yeah, he really lost himself in that character. It wasn't. I mean, the thing is, he won an Oscar for There Will Be Blood, mm-hmm. and I felt he was playing a very similar character to what he played in the Scorsese movie, Things in New York. It was not that different. This was a very different mm-hmm. character.
Oh, absolutely.
Than what he's done before.
I mean, he is very good at playing like that similar character to that, you know, that heartless son of a bitch. But, you know, he was very warm. He was very personable. And it's also fucking Abraham Lincoln. If anybody's listening to this outside of, you know, the United States, he's like, you know, he's kind of like a living legend. I mean, he's like Santa Claus here.
Right, of course. Yeah, no. I would say he's probably one of the top three most recognizable presidents of all time.
Yeah, he's got this legendary status here, but, you know, this movie was so well made, and Daniel Day-Lewis, you know, brought so much to it. Steven Spielberg did the right thing with getting the screenwriters that he did, and he really brought that character down to earth. I mean, he had all the stuff that you'd expect out of it, but I was really surprised at the humor that he brought to the character. And just like that, you know, a lot of people, and I used to be one of them, but, you know, the more I read, the more it makes sense. A lot of people have a hard time reconciling the dude born in the log cabin to, you know, becoming, like, you know, arguably one of the most powerful people in the world. But you can see both sides of that in this performance in this movie. I mean, you could totally tell that, you know, he's just a very intelligent guy. He had, you know, he had the country's best intentions at heart. But he also wasn't made out to be, like, he was a very human Lincoln, and I wasn't. Yeah. I thought it was great. It's my number one. It's my favorite movie of the year.
Well, I think one of the things you kind of touched upon, which I agree, is that, like, I think a lot of people who saw War Horse, who had problems with War Horse, were a little bit trepidatious because they felt like, okay, we know the movie that Steven Spielberg is going to make, mm-hmm. and it was not that movie.
No.
It wasn't Lincoln as a War Horse. Although, by the way, did you see the cameo of War Horse? Because Joey is in the movie.
Yep, I saw that. That was awesome.
Saw that, okay. Mm-hmm. I was surprised how many people didn't realize that was Joey and didn't recognize him right away from War Horse.
Yep, totally caught it. Yeah. I kind of giggled.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Steven Spielberg doesn't owe a fucking thing to a fucking person on this planet. I mean, he's got one of the most incredible filmographies out there. And if he makes a movie that you don't like a whole hell of a lot, like War Horse or the Terminal or something, just shut the hell up. Because this guy is giving up. This guy has shaped cinema. And I like, this is such a good fucking movie. It's my favorite movie of the year. I don't think it's going to take Best Picture at the Oscars. I think Spielberg's going to work.
I think it is.
Do
I
you?
You know why? Because I think it's between that and Les Mis, and
I think Hooper's too close. Tom Hooper's win's too close with King's Speech.
Well, it is, but I think Kathryn Bigelow's in there too, but I think it's not going to be that. I think it's because some people, you know, I think some people don't like the way it was shot. I mean, I've heard people who love the performances, but not so much the direction, and that might, you know, whereas I think Lincoln's direction is getting a lot of, you know, praise. So I think that's going to be the factor, I think.
Well, you know, I it'd be nice to see Steven Spielberg take picture and director again. He hasn't done that since Schindler's List. He took director with Saving Private Ryan and got fucked out of the Best Picture Oscar. But
it's his best movie in a long time, and it deserves to get.
Oh, it's such a good movie. I mean, it is kind of. I keep saying it, but it makes me want to throttle people the way they're reacting to this movie because they just seem to see a different movie than me. I mean, this was a really good. I mean, Ethan, this movie is on par with Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan. It is that good, and people are like, "Yeah, fuck mm-hmm. this movie." I just don't get it. It is that simple. I don't get it because I thought it was very good.
I gotta say, it's doing really well. Yeah. People are seeing it, so definitely. So definitely, I mean, it's word's getting around that it's a good movie.
I'd love to see it take picture. I'd love to see Spielberg get his third Oscar. You know, I'd love to see Daniel Day-Lewis get his third Oscar. I'd like to see Anne Hathaway get her first Oscar. You know, I guess Sally Field could win her third Oscar, but probably not. I think
Tommy Lee Jones. I mean, one thing you didn't mention, Tommy Lee Jones is his performance in the movie.
I brought him up.
It's great. I think he might actually get an Oscar again for that too.
An Oscar or a nod?
He'll get a nod for sure. I think he might win the Oscar.
He might. And you know what? I'd love to see happen, Ed and Ethan and listeners. I would love to see Tommy Lee Jones and Sally Field and Daniel Day-Lewis win for this, because nobody's ever won an acting Oscar for a Spielberg movie. Most people don't realize that, but it's the truth. Wow. And so it'd be kind of cool to see three, you know, like I think six or seven people have won acting Oscars for Clint Eastwood movies, and then Mr. Legendary himself, fucking Steven Spielberg, nobody's ever won. They've been nominated.
Tom Hanks didn't get for Saving Private Ryan?
Nope. That was the year that, what was that, 97? Shakespeare in Love year, and it would have been, that was Roberto Benigni. No, Roberto Benigni for Life is Beautiful. But yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. So I'd like to see that happen. You know, granted, I think that out of the three of them, I think that Daniel Day-Lewis is by far the most deserving. I kind of wonder if his Daniel Day-Lewis-ish will work against him, and they'll throw a bone to Hugh Jackman for Les Miserables, because I guess people like him, and I thought he was very good. So, yep, my number one favorite movie of the year is Lincoln.
Oh, cool. By the way, before you guys leave, I want to recommend two movies to you guys if you haven't seen them yet, because I haven't heard it in either list. And
okay,
I don't know
go ahead.
Number one, Zero Dark Thirty. It should be playing here soon.
I do want to see that.
I think you'll both kind of like that one based on your tastes. And the other one is Silver Linings Playbook. Have you had a chance to see that yet?
I'm gonna go see that Friday.
Okay. I would say that's a good white one to take the wives to. It's but those two movies are the ones which are gonna be in the Oscar race with the other ones we've mentioned. So it's good to have those I've seen it already kind of. Book, I guess.
Sounds good.
Sure.
All right, Ethan, why don't we do our rundown of our list? We'll stick a fork in this for the year.
All righty. It sounds like a plan. My number 10 actually was a movie that I went and saw by myself, and actually it's one of those that I really just really loved. It's Dredd. New Judge Dredd movie.
I forgot about that. I haven't seen it. I forgot it was even coming out. It came out like September.
I've never read the comics or anything like that. And I've seen the Stallone Massacre.
Yeah.
But this one I really liked. And that's pretty much all I can say about it. It's number 10 on my list. I liked it. Number 9 was Rock of Ages. Now. Yeah.
Is there an Ethan quote on that poster?
I'm going to tell you right now where this movie came out at a time that I needed it. And I liked the music in the movie, and it came out at a time I needed a movie that just was lighthearted and entertaining, and that's what it did for me, and I just really enjoyed it. Number 8 was Dark Knight Rises.
Mm-hmm.
Number 7 was The Amazing Spider-Man. I just rewatched this the other day because I got it for Christmas, I liked it more the second time I saw it, which was then. So, liked Amazing Spider-Man. Number 6, Prometheus. Number 5, Argo. Number 4, The Avengers. Number 3, Skyfall. Number 2, Looper. And number 1, Les Miserables.
Very good. All right, Ed.
By the way, Ethan, you know you have two musicals in your top 10 now.
I do. Yeah.
Okay. What was that? Sure. Rock of Ages. Okay. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I hate musicals. Wait.
Okay. I only have one comic book a movie on my list on purpose, and I think quality wise reflects it too, but it's also on purpose. All right, Ed. How's your
looking? Okay. My top 10. Number 10 was Prometheus. Number 9 was Cabin in the Woods, which was a really funny kind of horror take on horror by Avengers director Joss Whedon, who wrote it and produced it.
Yeah, but Drew Goddard directed it. Yeah,
he didn't direct it, but he wrote and produced it. Yeah,
right. I called it the horror movie for people who haven't liked a horror movie in 15 years.
There you go. That's good.
Yeah.
My number 8 was Les Mis. Number 7 was a movie called Samsara, which is a completely narrative free. It's hard to describe without taking up another hour of the show. Samsara. Look for it. Google it. Number 6 was Skyfall. Number 5 was The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Number 4 was Chico and Rita. Number 3 was The Impossible. Number 2 was The Untouchables. And number 1 was Life of Pi, with my number 1 doc being Searching for Sugar Man.
Very good, very good. All right, my number 10, like I said before, was Chico and Rita. My number nine, I just kind of threw it in here because I thought it was funny. I mean, but it's Ted, this Seth MacFarlane movie. I mean, it's not going to change the world. I was talking to somebody about it the other day. I said, it's not going to change the world, but there's worse ways to spend 90 minutes. And I laughed. And then rounding out my quadfecta, I don't even know if that's a word, but it's Premium Rush. I have all four of Joseph Gordon-Levitt's releases on here, but just incidentally. What I liked, okay, this is, once again, this is going to be a really weird comparison here, but in its own little way, Premium Rush reminded me of Collateral, in that it was showing, it was showing a part of the like the inside of a service industry that's, you know, that's right there in your face. Well, maybe not so much ours, but probably more Ed's, or at least was before the internet or whatever, of the bicycle messengers, and just kind of seeing, like, I don't want to call it the underbelly of that world, but it was neat to see a job that isn't a fucking doctor, a lawyer, or something cool. Mm-hmm. It was idiots riding around on a bicycle and then being chased by General Zod or what have you.
They still have them, by the way. They still are very much present in New York.
Yeah.
We've got them here in Kansas City.
Yeah. I just don't live in Kansas City, but yeah, I liked it. I thought it was a good movie. I liked it.
I liked it too.
Yeah. But. Yeah. And then my number seven was Cabin in the Woods. Ooh. And yeah, like I said, I just really appreciated it because it was a really smart ass movie. If I didn't know that Joss Whedon had something to do with it, I would know that Joss Whedon had something to do with it, even if it was just an influence, because it just, like, the pop culture in there, the smart attitude and all that stuff going along.
And see, I didn't rank that movie very high for the year, but I also recognize it's not a movie that was really made for me. So I liked it, but I thought it was clever, but that was about it.
Yep. Okay, and then rounding out my number six was Sleepwalk With Me by Mike Birbiglia and Seth Barish. Number five was Looper, Rian Johnson. Number four, Les Miserables by Tom Hooper. Number three, The Dark Knight Rises, Christopher Nolan. Number two, Django Unchained by Quentin Tarantino. My number one favorite movie of the year was Lincoln by Steven Spielberg. Boom, guys. I thought it was a good year for movies. You guys, too? Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I always find movies year. I like, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, to me, there didn't feel like any of the, like I honestly felt like with last year, with Captain America and Thor and stuff like that, there's a lot of placeholder movies in there waiting for the Avengers and Dark Knight Rises and et ceteras and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But these are some movies that I liked an awful lot. And, I'm not, again, I think we might have more of a 2012 year coming up this next year, because there's nothing that I'm chomping at the bit to see coming up this next year, but there's stuff I want to see. Like, I want to see the Star Trek movie, because I saw the 10-minute doohickey on The Hobbit, and it looked pretty damn cool.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. I guess.
I think you're totally right about Benedict Cumberbatch, by the way.
What?
He's the new Christopher Lee.
He's totally the new Christopher Lee. You know, what?
That's what I was saying. That's interesting, because he was kind of had a Eddie Redmayne feeling about him for a long time. So.
Yeah. I think he's a new Christopher Lee. He's going to be that guy that came up with English British cinema, and he's going to become like this powerhouse in the movie villains. And you know, maybe he's a jerk, like Ed said, but I think Tom Hardy might be a new Gary Oldman. And he was a jerk, too, for a long time. So we'll see what happens. So some good movies. I want to point this out. It's not going to show up on my list, but I would say the movie that – this is – I have a hard time wording this. But I would say the movie that I still liked that ranked the lowest on my list would probably be – it would probably be The Hobbit. Really disappointed in that movie because they tried to make it too big. They tried to make it too fucking Lord of the Rings. They tried, and there were so many flashbacks in it. At one point, I don't remember, it was like the fourth or the fifth flashback, and I don't know, 30 minutes, I accidentally said way too loud. Oh, for fuck's sake. And the whole theater started laughing at me. And
I was bothered by the 48. I want to see it again.
The 48 frames a second? Yeah.
So distracted by the 48 that it was hard to watch.
I stopped noticing about, I don't know, 5 minutes into the movie. And I don't think I ever noticed the 3D. I don't think I ever noticed it. But, maybe that's good, maybe it's bad. But guys, I think it's been a good year.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great. If nothing else, we'll have you on next year for this for sure. And maybe we'll have you on before then, too. We'll have to see what happens. All right. Do you guys have anything to add before we stick a fork in this bitch?
Nope. I think we've been over it enough.
We've been over it.
I mean, the only thing good I'd say about 2012 is that, like, I don't know if you guys remember, but last year, my favorite movie of the year was the first movie I saw. And that's really hard. On Sundays? It's really hard to have a year like that where you, really the first movie you see is the best movie you've seen.
Yeah.
So this year, at least, stuff was kind of spread out more, and I was very I was happy about that. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think it was a very good year for movies, and I'm looking forward to the Oscars and the nominations in, what, 2 weeks, something like that?
Very soon. It's actually
what is
a
it?
Week from tomorrow.
Is it the 10th? Yeah, the 10th.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I'm looking forward to seeing that. Looking forward to seeing that.
Yep, we'll figure out what movies I need to watch between once they.
I got a feeling I have a feeling that we're not going to get up to 10 nominations this year, and I also kind of have a feeling that I've probably seen a hell of a lot more walking into when we get the nominations versus.
I think I will have seen at least one of them.
Hmm. I bet I've seen at least half. So we'll have to see what happens.
Whereas last year I had seen none of them.
Oh. Yeah, Ethan, you try to catch up on those. I'd say Lincoln is a good bet to go.
Yeah, I have tried to see Lincoln twice, and fate has interceded. So
it's a good movie. I can't recommend.
It's a long story, but I do want to see Lincoln.
Yeah, I know.
I've tried twice and failed.
Well, don't let me building it up so much ruin it for you. It's a very good movie, but it's I don't think you're gonna like it better than Les Mis.
I'm about to tell you right now, if you're gonna see Zero Dark Thirty when it opens there on the 11th, buy advance tickets because that's gonna get nominated, and it's gonna be hard to get tickets. So
you think so?
So,
I don't know. We don't really have a whole hell of a lot of class here, so I don't think anybody goes to see good movies. So let's see what
happens. I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. People expect it to be bigger than, pretty big. So,
cool.
Bigger than Elvis. Bigger than Jesus. But until next week, thank you again for being on, Ed. But until next week, I'm Aaron.
I'm Ethan.
Let your geek flag fly.
Should all the greatest be forgotten, never brought to mind? Should all the greatest be forgotten, days of all blank sign? Don't forget the ones you love and let's have a good time. Don't forget the ones you love and days of all blank sign.